Okay, hello everyone and welcome to HQ Overtime, the official post-game show for Raptors HQ, SB Nation's Raptors team site. My name's John Godis and Fear the Sword writer Justin Rowan is back to talk about Game 3 of the East Semifinal between the Raptors and Heat, a 95-91 victory for the Raptors, a big win that gets them back home court in this East Semi series. You can drop your questions for us either in the comments of our post-game show article at RaptorsHQ.com or by tweeting at RaptorsHQ and myself at John Godis. That's J-O-H-N-G-A-U-D-E-S. And if you want to get notified first when we go on the air, you can download the Mixlr app for iOS or Android and follow RaptorsHQ. Justin, we would be remiss if we didn't start this show by talking about Kyle Lowry. 33 points, 29 in the second half, almost all of them coming after Jonas Valanciunas' ankle injury, and we'll get to that in a few minutes. But this was Lowry's coming out party for the playoffs, and it came at the perfect time for the Raptors.
Yeah, Kyle Lowry's back, or at least hopefully he's back. I do think Hassan Whiteside exiting the game did have a big impact on both Lowry and DeRozan, more so DeRozan than Lowry, just because there isn't the threat of him blocking everything in sight when you take it to the rim. And that indecision has been something that's been plain for everybody to see in the first two games of the series and until Whiteside went down. But yeah, it just looked like Lowry started to get a little bit more confidence with the jumper. And he got a few easy baskets inside as well to build up that confidence. But now that he's hitting shots again, I mean, he's said that the elbow doesn't bother him. I don't know if I completely buy that. I think players hate making excuses for themselves. But if he can get rolling, that is a huge difference maker for this series.
Yeah, we've talked about it, you know, both ways. You know, Zach Lowe on his podcast last week mentioned that he heard that the elbow isn't bothering Lowry, that this is all mental. He spent time shooting the ball after game one, and that led you to believe it was a mental thing. But it's hard to believe that his struggles being that they've coincided almost exactly with when he banged that elbow against Orlando, that the elbow isn't the major deciding factor in what's been ailing his shot up to this point. So,
That in January though?
The initial one, he banged it again in March, and that's when it really started to drop off. But tonight he was 11-19. He made a couple of threes to get himself going in the third quarter, ended up 5-for-8 from beyond the arc. And 5 assists as well, which is nice to see, or rather 2 assists, which is nice to see as well. This obviously changes the series quite a bit, and there's one other big factor that will decide this series. Can Lowry continue to have production like this if Whiteside makes a quick return, which, you know, the x-rays were negative. You would expect him to come back probably sooner rather than later.
Yeah, I think Lowry can keep this going just because he does have that outside shot and that three-point shot, even with some injury and some lack of confidence. It was going to progress to the mean eventually. I think now that he's seen it go down and he has a big game under his belt, that's going to help him from a confidence standpoint. And even with Hassan Whiteside coming back into it, I still think he'll have more success than he's had in the past. Whiteside isn't a good pick and roll defender by any stretch of the imagination, and that's one of the primary actions the Raptors use to free up Lowry. So that's something to consider. I don't know if Whiteside comes back. Ethan Stolnick, I'm pronouncing the last name incorrectly, I know it, said that people in Miami aren't exactly optimistic, but we won't know anything until that MRI comes back.
Yeah, and that's obviously going to be a huge factor in this series. Briefly, before we talk about the two centers who were injured in this game, let's talk about the Raptors' D a little bit. Outside of Lowry, and it's kind of been the offense that's been the frustration point for the Raptors in the playoffs so far, so seeing Lowry break out like this is going to be the number one thing that you take away from this game. But the defense was solid as well. Dwayne Wade was really the only guy who really went off for the Heat. He had 38 points on 25 shots. But they finally found a way to bottle up Dragic for the first time in the series. Dragic was just 5 of 14 for 12 points. The Heat were abysmal from beyond the arc for almost the first time in these playoffs. They shot just 4 of 18. Wade made all their three-pointers in this game. So how much of this do you think was the Heat just missing shots? I think there was a lot of effort put in by the Raptors to at least run out at guys, but you know, the Heat have been making these threes, and some of them have been difficult looks for the last couple weeks, and things just kind of shifted today.
I mean, Miami doesn't really have shooters. Like, no. That's the thing. And Toronto is the second worst team at defending the three-point line, so you're going to see Miami's three-point percentages inflate a little bit. But Dwayne Wade, I think he, in the playoff series, hit seven consecutive threes. I know he missed one after that, but he made seven threes on the season. Like, that's just weird. That's an anomaly. That's nothing to do with the Raptors' defense. It's hard to say how much you put on Toronto's defense, how much you put it on Miami just missing shots, but the fact of the matter is the defense was better overall for the Raptors. One of the main takeaways, though, especially if you want to talk about defense, is Luis Scola can't play.
Like, yeah, you and cannot we're going to talk him. About that. I mean, we can talk about that right now. The stretch from the third to fourth quarter. You had the tweet that he was minus nine in the first 2 minutes he played. He ended up playing 5:22, was a minus 13. No points, picked up three fouls early in the fourth, almost put the Heat in the bonus by himself. He had no place in the Pacers series, and yet he played consistent minutes for four games. They finally got smart and took him out. But with the Valanciunas injury, Scola was the first guy off the bench, and I certainly don't agree with that. What would your alternative be?
Patrick Patterson at the five, Biombo at the five. God, if you really had to play Damari Carroll, because especially if Hassan Whiteside doesn't come back, if Whiteside's back, then your hands are kind of tied. Maybe you even put in Bebe. Like, honestly, I would rather put in Nogueira over Scola at this point. He has no part of this series. There's nothing positive that he can contribute. He's had a nice year overall. He's been a nice value signing for Toronto, but the games matter too much. You can't, if he's going to put you in a 13-point or have a 13-point swing in 5 minutes, 9 points in the first two, that's unacceptable, because that undoes an entire game of work. Because Toronto and Miami, they're struggling to score. Having a 10-point lead in this series is almost insurmountable, because these teams just, for whatever reason, cannot score. And if you blow it that quickly, you undo three quarters of work in a blink of an eye, and you just can't afford to do that.
I totally agree. Yeah, my thinking here was that Patterson played 35 minutes tonight. Scola had five of those minutes at center. Once Valanciunas was out, those were, you know, Patterson is your best option to play the five as a backup to Biombo. And Biombo hasn't been that good. We can talk about Patterson in the context of the fact that he was excellent down the stretch as a screener for Lowry, getting Lowry a little bit of space to create and get himself good shots. So Patterson is obviously the next guy up at the five, and he could have played five more minutes tonight. I have no doubt that Patterson could have played 40 minutes. And if you needed to give him a couple minutes of break, I'd rather have seen Jason Thompson there. Bebe preferably,
yeah,
but Bebe
yeah,
wasn't
completely
dressed.
Forgot. I completely forgot about Jason Thompson. That's another great option for them. I definitely wouldn't put Carroll in at the five then. I completely forgot he existed, but... yes, Jason Thompson is a better player than Scola.
Yeah, so have we. Jason Thompson, I think he's not polished, obviously, but he can grab rebounds. He can have a defensive impact. And Scola, we could say it over and over again, has no place in this series. We've kind of taken a lot of people's questions off the table here, because there was a lot of frustration around those few minutes that the Raptors almost gave this one back. If you want to drop a late question in for us, you can tweet at myself, at John Godes, J-O-H-N-G-A-U-D-E-S. Obviously, this is HQ Overtime. I've got Justin Rowan here. Let's talk about the two big injuries from this game. Hassan Whiteside left in the second quarter with a sprained knee, I believe, and Valanciunas left in the third quarter with a sprained ankle. Both had, I don't believe actually Valanciunas had x-rays. It was diagnosed a sprain, and he's not going to go for x-rays. Whiteside did have x-rays. Those came up negative for him, and like you said earlier, there's not a lot of confidence among Heat beat writers that he will be back quickly, because he's struggled with knee injuries over the last few weeks or a couple months. Who benefits most you know, from these two injuries, because this was the matchup that we pegged right off the top of the series. Whoever wins the Valanciunas versus Whiteside matchup is going to win the series. But who benefits most if both those guys don't play?
Toronto. Like, Toronto is the deeper team. Hassan Whiteside he's not the best player in the series, but or player overall on either team, but he's been the best player in the series. The way that he can completely negate any effectiveness of DeMar DeRozan, which sometimes DeRozan does that himself, but also the impact that he's had on Kyle Lowry. Like I mentioned before, he's not a great pick and roll defender. He does get burned by players with good post skills. We saw that in the first round with Al Jefferson. We've seen it now with Jonas Valanciunas. But the overall impact he has on the game is just greater than Jonas. And part of me saying that is also keeping game two in mind, where the Raptors just didn't utilize Jonas at all. He did have the big overtime, but overall, Whiteside has been more important to what Miami's been doing than Jonas has. And that's not to discredit Jonas. You can make a great case for him as well. But I think overall, with Toronto being the deeper team, if both are out, Toronto gets the advantage there.
Yeah, I would agree with you because the Heat really have nobody behind Whiteside who can effectively play center. You know, Udonis Haslem is out on the last legs of his career. Josh McRoberts is not a great player at that position. He's more accustomed to playing the four. So it's tough. And Amari Stoudemire only played 3 minutes tonight, and he hasn't been that great. So it's tough for the Heat to fill that void because Whiteside is so, like you said, instrumental to them. My only worry for the Raptors is that the offense has been stuck in the mud for almost all of these playoffs because Lowry and DeRozan haven't played well. Hopefully Lowry's play today is sustainable because Valanciunas has been that source of easy offense for them. So, you know, hopefully Lowry's play carries over because the guy we'll talk about now has not been great. He tried once again to shoot us out of it and could not do it in this game. 6 for 17, DeMar DeRozan. I think 15 of those shots were long twos. We've had this conversation, I think, in almost every HQ Overtime episode. So we get all sorts of takes, and most of them are similar. But what can they do about DeRozan? Do they sit him? Do they, you know, does he just need to make better decisions? Do they kind of just have to sit back and hope for the best? What's your perspective on this? I know we talked about it 2 weeks ago, but it's still an issue today.
I don't know. Like, he should be doing better. Like, he was doing better when Whiteside was out initially, but then he just makes these god-awful decisions. And I think, like, playoffs is just too much for him. It really seems to be the case that he's just not a playoff performer. I guess the positive is he had more points than shots. A lot of that was him going to the free throw line with intentional fouls late.
Yeah.
I don't know, because when you look at him and, let's say, Damari Carroll, like, if you switch their field goal attempts and Carroll was the one taking the 17 shots, are they in a better position? Maybe. Like, if Norman Powell's taking 17 shots, is he going to hit more than 30%, 33%? It's possible. Like, yeah. It's just, it always... In the past, it's always felt like volume was the main reason for DeRozan's success. This year felt different. He had the improved handle. His decision-making was better. He got his assist numbers up. To his credit, he did have 5 assists, which led the team today, which probably should be mentioned, and only 2 turnovers, where Kyle Lowry had 4 turnovers to his 2 assists. But really, it's just poor decision-making, and... I don't think you can bench him, but at the same time, like, maybe Jerry Stackhouse has to kind of smack him around, although Jerry Stackhouse might not be the best example of coming up in the playoffs.
Yeah, absolutely. It's frustrating. It is like, for the Raptors fans, it is just kind of, he's going to get his minutes. He's going to play 40 minutes. You just have to hope for the best game to game. I think game 7 was the peak DeRozan example where he's scored volume points on volume shots. Maybe you get that, but it's tough. It's tough. It's hard to have this conversation after every game, but DeRozan just has not performed up to his standards in this playoffs. And I should mention that his handles, while improved this season, they've completely abandoned him in this playoffs. He's turned it over multiple times each game trying to cross guys up, taking, and if he does get it, he takes tough shots. And that's a big part of his game because he's a prober to get to the lane. He doesn't use speed or anything like that. So, again, that's a tough aspect because teams are able to load up on him and force him into these tough shots, and he hasn't adopted that well. Like you said, though, 5 assists, that's helpful for the team to 2 turnovers. So there are some positives to be taken from DeRozan's night. I know that in the scheme of the larger playoff picture here, this is probably the least pretty series to watch, although it has been the closest of the 4 semifinal series going on. As somebody who follows the Cavs as a primary team, does anything have you worried about the Heat or the Raptors? The Hawks are pretty much all but done with. We'll probably see that series end tomorrow, I believe. But yeah, any perspective on this series from an outside look?
Oh, man. Like, I don't want to be that cocky dick, but no. Like, when you look at the Cavs kind of firing in all cylinders now, 7 times in playoff history has a team hit 23-pointers in a game. 3 of those 7 have been the Cavs in this year's playoffs. They've hit 46 threes in the last 2 games. Toronto is the second worst team at defending the 3-point line. You look at this game and this whole series, they're just these low-scoring games where these teams are disjointed. They struggle to score. I just don't see how these teams stack up. Like, I honestly think Atlanta at this point, with the way Kyle Lowry and DeMar DeRozan have been playing, with Chris Bosh out for Miami, I think Atlanta's the second best playoff team in the East. And they had their best effort in Game 3. It was close. I thought that was going to be the game that Atlanta took from the Cavs. They didn't. I don't see where either of these teams really get a game, unless the Cavs go really cold, because when you're this hot, the law of averages say you're going to get cold. But like, if the Cavs roll out Channing Frye at center, Kevin Love at power forward, and LeBron at small forward, I don't see how you keep Jonas or Whiteside on the court, if they're even playing.
Yeah, it's tough because I would actually agree with you. I think we talked a couple weeks ago while the Pistons series was going on that this was the perfect storm for the Cavs. They were able to get going while playing competitive games. And now Atlanta just doesn't match up that well with the Cavs, and they've continued to shoot the ball tremendously well. They look like a team that is ready to challenge either the Spurs or Warriors as one of those top three teams in the NBA. Which obviously coming into the playoffs, every Eastern Conference competitor was kind of hoping they would stumble a little bit, and that just hasn't happened. Mm-hmm. I would agree with you there. Let's jump into some people's questions here. We've got a few to get to, so if you want to drop one in at the end, you just tweet at myself, at John Godes, J-O-H-N-G-A-U-D-E-S. Brian Christensen tweets in, how did Scola play more minutes than Norm? Well, we addressed Scola, but we didn't really talk about Norm. Norm Powell played just 4 minutes tonight, was a -3, nothing on the stat line except for 1 steal. Played good defense on the last Wade shot that was in and out. But just as from a casual perspective, what place does Norm Powell have in this series?
Honestly, I was really surprised that Casey didn't go to him, especially Corey Joseph was kind of struggling defensively on Dwayne Wade. Wade isn't the tallest player, but he has tremendous length, and Kojo just couldn't seem to affect him at all. And I think Norm Powell, with the way he's played defense and the composure he showed in the playoffs, and the fact that he's been starting recently and from going from a starter to 4 minutes in a game is kind of the full Dwayne Casey experience. I really thought that they should have gone to him, especially when Wade was starting to heat up, or even James Johnson, like just anything to throw Wade off, because really he's their only reliable option. He really is.
And before the series, we kind of all pegged out that Norman Powell rather would see more minutes guarding Wade than he is right now. But it's, you're right, Corey Joseph struggled at times tonight. I would like to see more minutes for Powell. Part of it is that Terrence Ross has played well in Game 1 and 2. He was not great this evening, so it could shift again. That it's shifted Terrence Ross's way the last few games. It could shift back to Norm Powell in Game 4. I guess we'll see about that. Jesse Lawrence tweets in, if you're going to take Bismack out and not play him in the fourth, why not just stick with him for longer over Scola? Like I talked about earlier, I think that, you know, if you're going to play somebody at the five, Patterson showed tonight that he's the most effective to shift into that because there's no Whiteside and they can afford to go super small like that. But again, if you had 5 minutes, I would rather see Biombo play 5 minutes than Scola. Anybody, really.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, for sure. And I tweeted out during the game, but it is kind of unfortunate that Bismack Biombo's turned back into a pumpkin in the playoffs. Like, he's been so good and such a big part of what Toronto's done. And, like, for him to step up, and maybe if Jonas is out a game or two and he's back into that starting role, you see him step up in the way he did throughout the season. That would be huge for them, because then they're really winning kind of the battle of the missing centers if Biombo can contribute like he has. But, yeah, I'm with you. There's no way that Scola should play in this series at all.
Different angle to the same topic. Kareem tweets in, what do you think Casey and Co were hoping to achieve when he put in Scola? I'll let you go first. I really don't know.
I think Dwayne Casey has a bit of a fetish for veterans. I think that was simply, he's got the playoff experience. I just think it was one of those things where Biombo wasn't playing particularly well. He didn't want to go Jason Thompson, who hasn't been with the team as long as the other guys. Scola has had good moments throughout the season, and I think Casey just went that direction for that reason.
Yeah, I mean, off the top of my head, I think Scola has made 4 or 5 shots this entire postseason, and that was mostly what he gave to the team during this season, which was a stretch four, as he added that 3-point shot to his game, has not been able to make that shot at all in the postseason. So there's a few more questions here about Luis Scola. We've had the conversation, if you want to go back and listen to it. Let's take one from Edwin here on Twitter. That two-pad and Carroll lineup as the bigs is looking pretty good defensively. Definitely, I would agree. What were your thoughts on that lineup?
Yeah, go with it. Like, with Jonas out, like, I was texting one of my buddies saying, I'm really excited to see if Casey uses Patterson, Scola, or sorry, not Patterson, Scola. Scola's on my mind now. Patterson, Carroll, with Powell, DeRozan, and Lowry, or if not Powell, Kojo. Like, I just think that type of small lineup is what Miami used against Charlotte very effectively. I just think Toronto can put out an even better version of that small ball lineup. And I just think that's a devastating move for Toronto. Like, I just don't see how Miami can cover that. Patterson is very mobile as well. He's tough. He's strong. He can play good defense, especially if they have Udonis Haslem out there. I hope that's an adjustment that Casey does make in the event that Jonas doesn't play in game four.
Yeah, like you said, the depth for the Raptors is really going to come into effect with Whiteside out, and they can afford to go to that super small lineup, which might just be like maxing out the talent they can have on the floor. When you put Patterson at the five, you don't have to play Biombo, who's not an offensive threat. And that looks great for the Raptors. We kind of fired through the questions here. I don't have any more at the moment, but let's briefly look forward here before we close off the show. What was your prediction for this series? Has it changed? What do you think we're going to see in game four? What do you see playing out here?
I mean, before the series, I picked Raptors in 7. I think game four is going to be really, really big for this, obviously. If Toronto does get the win in game four, it seems unthinkable. But if Whiteside and Jonas are out, I think there's a real chance for Raptors in 5. Miami is a lot better at home than they are on the road, so I wouldn't expect Miami to lose game four, but I'll just say that opportunity is there. I think Raptors in 7 still feels right to me. Both of these teams are inconsistent. It hasn't been great basketball at all. How Kyle Lowry plays is obviously going to be a big factor as well, but I feel it's tough for me to make a firm prediction when we don't know the status of Jonas and Whiteside, but I'm still going to stick with Raptors in 7.
Yeah, this is obviously, these injuries change things quite a bit. We'll definitely be having different conversations as this series progresses. Let's leave it at that. Justin, where can people find you?
You can find me on Twitter at Cavs Canada. It's basically Canada, but slap Cavs in there. Also writing for the Sword, as well as Hoops Habit. And I also do some video stuff for Hoops Lounge as well. Be sure to check that out. We were doing a lot of Canadian basketball coverage in that. So definitely tweet at me, and I'll send you links to all those places. But those would be the best places to find me.
Yeah, definitely go do that. We appreciate you being our weekend warrior here, coming on again on a Saturday. Thanks for coming on.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
All right, we will be back for game four. That game is on Monday. Our guest is going to be Sean Woodley. Look for the post-game thread on RaptorsHQ.com or tune in from Twitter at RaptorsHQ. You can also subscribe to archived episodes of this show on our weekly podcast, The Headquarters, on iTunes. You can give us a rating and review there. It's always greatly appreciated. I think a new episode of that show is going to be dropped in the next few days here. Thanks again to Justin Rowan for coming on. That's HQ Overtime, everyone. Thanks for tuning in.
Love.